Last Sunday night, we jumped back into the story of Abraham and his life and the stories that are associated with his life. And we looked specifically at the birth of Isaac. Isaac was the promised son that God promised to Abraham and to Sarah. And this amazing miracle finally took place. Abraham at the age of 100 years old and Sarah at the age of 90. And so we looked last week at how God stepped down into human history and began a storyline of the promised son, Isaac, and led all the way to the birth of Christ. Well, I want to pick up a story in Genesis chapter 21. So I'm going to read chapter 21 beginning at verse 8 and read through verse 21. Listen to this story of Hagar and Ishmael. The child grew and was weaned, and on the day Isaac was weaned, Abraham held a great feast. But Sarah saw that the son whom Hagar the Egyptian had borne to Abraham was mocking. And she said to Abraham, "Get rid of that slave woman and her son, for that slave woman's son will never share in the inheritance with my son Isaac." The matter distressed Abraham greatly because it concerned his son. But God said to him, "Do not be distressed about the boy and your maidservant. Listen to whatever Sarah tells you, because it is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned, and I will make the son of the maidservant into a nation also, because he is your offspring." Early the next morning, Abraham took some food and a skin of water and gave them to Hagar. He set them on her shoulders and sent her off with a boy. She went on her way and wandered in the desert of Beersheba. When the water and the skin was gone, she put the boy under one of the bushes. Then she went off and sat down nearby about a bow shot away, for she thought, "I cannot watch the boy die." And as she sat there nearby, she began to sob. God heard the boy crying. And the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, "What is the matter, Hagar? Do not be afraid. God has heard the boy crying as he lies there. Lift up the boy and take him by the hand, for I will make him into a great nation." Then God opened her eyes and she saw a well of water. So she went and filled the skin with water and gave the boy a drink. God was with the boy as he grew up. He lived in the desert and became an archer. While he was living in the desert of Paran, his mother got a wife for him from Egypt. We can only imagine all the emotions that are a part of this story. Much like the story we looked back three chapters ago, the same tensions, the same problem, the same root of pain surfaces again in this chapter. On one side, we have the joy and the happiness and the wonder of this miraculous birth and how joyful Abraham and Sarah must have been. I mean, Isaac was named Laughter. He laughs. He is laughing. The name Isaac means we're all laughing. What a party it must have been of celebration for them. For Abraham and Sarah, this baby boy was a great long-awaited promise, and God had finally fulfilled it, and there was much joy that took place because of the birth of Abraham. But we also know that when there's a problem within, in the human heart, that even the best of circumstances can't cover up for painful things that often are lurking inside. Just as Sarah and Abraham were enjoying the great blessing of the celebration of Isaac, there continued to be a boiling, perhaps underneath the surface for a time, of the tensions between Sarah and Hagar. Whereas before, you might say Sarah's deep pain drove her feelings, it seems like now there's a different tension that takes place as Sarah is watching Hagar and her son. We see that the son of Hagar began to mock at this great ceremony and how Sarah's the one that noticed. I circled a word in verse 9 in my Bible that said, "But Sarah saw that the son whom Hagar the Egyptian had borne to Abraham was mocking." Sarah, whatever reason, whatever was a part of her life, past and present, could not seem to take her eyes off the thing that had bothered her so much and had troubled her for so long. And so she saw the mocking that took place. This time it was Ishmael who mocked. You might could say, like mother, like son, because it was earlier, three chapters ago, that Sarah heard that Hagar was mocking, and it made her angry. And so she mistreated Hagar. But once again, Sarah notices the mocking that takes place. Well, we go back in this story to verse 8, and it says, "The child grew and was weaned, and on the day Isaac was weaned, Abraham held a great feast." Again, you had the great celebration and the great joy of Abraham and Sarah, and the weaning of a child in Abraham's day was very important. When we think about why would the day of weaning be important or the time of weaning important, we know that in Jewish history, the celebration of the weaning was very important. And when you think about it, in Abraham's day, the mortality rate for babies was far higher than it was even a few hundred years later. And as we think about it today, there were no hospitals, there were no medicines, there were no antibiotics, there were no immunization shots, there were no doctors, and babies often died in infancy. So instead of having maybe a family that would have 5 or 6 or 7 living children, they may only have 2 or 3 of those that were born. And the mortality rate took many, many babies in Abraham's time. And so when a baby got to the point that they had made it through babyhood or the dependency on mother, it was a time of great celebration. It was an important time of celebration. It was a recognition of something. It was a recognition that that child had grown old enough and strong enough that it looked like they would grow into adulthood. And so Abraham, in the custom of the day, was to celebrate that. And so Abraham has this great feast. You can kind of see how important it is because Abraham holds a great feast. It must have been a proud day, a proud moment for Abraham and Sarah that their precious little Isaac had gotten to the age that it looked like he was going to make it. And they had a great celebration. It was kind of seen as a passage of safety. Later on in Jewish history, they would celebrate this weaning as part of Jewish culture. And I read a little bit about that. Jewish history records that they often had a ceremony for the weaning. And this may have been, it kind of may have come from this story of Abraham. But in Jewish culture later on, they would have a ceremony to recognize that the child had been weaned. And they would read this psalm that I'm going to read to you, part of the psalm, as part of the celebration of life that God had given to the family. It's Psalm 104. "Praise the Lord, O my soul. O Lord my God, you are very great. You are clothed with splendor and majesty. He wraps himself in light as with a garment. He stretches out the heavens like a tent and lays the beams of the upper chambers on their waters. He makes the clouds his chariot and rides on the wings of the wind. He makes winds his messengers, flames of fire his servants. He set the earth on its foundation. It can never be moved. You covered it with deep as with a garment. The water stood above the mountains." And so they would read that psalm and part of that psalm. And that would be the reading and then the prayer of thanks that God had given them a child and God had brought that child through infancy. And so you can see this day of recognition, this day that was very special to Abraham and Sarah. Exactly how old was Isaac, we're not sure, but the Jews celebrated the weaning anytime from the age of 2 to the age of 5. Between that time, they would choose to do that. And so it was a very special day. And so while Sarah and Abraham are celebrating, Ishmael is kind of behind the scenes. And who knows what Ishmael was feeling? We certainly can imagine what Ishmael must have been feeling. I don't know if they had a weaning time of celebration for Ishmael. In fact, there's probably a lot of things about Ishmael that we wonder, whether he was treated the same way that Isaac was. And we certainly know that Hagar was not treated like Sarah was. We can imagine what it was like for Ishmael. I imagine, and I can be wrong, but from the whole context of the story and what happens next and what we see through history, I can imagine the feelings that Ishmael had grown up with. We know that he was the son of Abraham. He was the rightful first son, the rightful heir, and yet he grew up under this umbrella and cloud of animosity from the people around him, especially from Sarah. He must have been about 16 years old at the time, if you look at the age that Abraham was when he was born, and then how long it was and before the angels came and gave the message to Sarah, and then a year later, and then 2 years later, for at least 2 years later for the weaning, Ishmael would have had to been a mid-teenager, about that, somewhere between 14 and 16 years old. I don't know what he was like at that time, but we know that he had probably been watching during this time when the angels came and made this incredible promise to Abraham and Sarah. And he wondered about that, and how could this possibly be, this old woman Sarah who's mistreated my mom, and who knows all the feelings that he had about Abraham or about Sarah, and the rejection that he likely felt. The rejection that Ishmael must have felt, in part at least, had to be pretty intense. We know that he lived under the tension. He lived under the tension between the two women. And perhaps, maybe too, some of that bitterness and animosity had been passed on to Ishmael as well. Really don't know all that, but we do know that Ishmael and his mother played the second fiddle, and how difficult and how bitter that can be. And whatever was going on within Ishmael when it came to this great day of celebration, there he was behind the scenes, and he was mocking. Doesn't say who he was mocking, whether he was mocking Isaac or he was mocking Sarah or mocking what he was, but Sarah noticed. Sarah saw that the son whom Hagar the Egyptian had borne to Abraham was mocking. Whatever was going on inside of Hagar, he wasn't very happy about the joyous news of Isaac and his arrival. And you remember back in chapter 16 when Hagar had fled from Sarah, that the Lord had come to her with a message. And part of the message that the Lord had given to Hagar about Ishmael, about this boy, I'm going to start reading in verse 7. I'm going to read about what the angel of the Lord said, and then what the angel of the Lord said about Ishmael. The angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. It was the spring that is beside the road to Shur. And he said, "Hagar, servant of Sarah, where have you come from and where are you going?" And Sarah said, Hagar said, "I'm running away from Sarah." Then the angel of the Lord told her, "Go back to your mistress and submit to her." The angel added, "I will so increase your descendants that they will be too numerous to count." The angel of the Lord also told her, "You are now with child and you will have a son. You shall name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard of your misery. He will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone, and everyone's hand will be against him. And he will live in hostility toward all his brothers." So the angel told Ishmael, told Hagar, even before Ishmael was born, the angel gave the prophetic word that Ishmael would live in hostility toward his brothers. So likely when Isaac came, there again grew up within Ishmael a tension and negative feelings. And by the time they come to this time of great celebration, Ishmael's in the background and he's mocking. In some ways, we think of Hagar's life in Genesis chapter 1, that it had to be pretty rough. It had to be pretty difficult. It had to be pretty painful. Maybe Hagar had allowed those very negative circumstances to poison Ishmael as well. But by the time Isaac was weaned, the tensions had gotten so hot. And once again, we have round two of the open hostility between Sarah. We hear Sarah's cutting words and her reaction to this. It's not just the mocking of Ishmael made Sarah feel uncomfortable or maybe made her feel angry for a time, but you can see how the mocking of Ishmael goes deeply into the wound. And so Sarah says in verse 10, "And she said to Abraham, 'Get rid of that slave woman and her son, for that slave woman's son will never share in the inheritance with my son Isaac.'" You just hear in the words, the icy words of Sarah, I don't know if you would say hatred, but the deep animosity, not only to Sarah, but also, not only to Hagar, but also to Ishmael as well. Get rid of that slave woman. You see, in Sarah's eyes, ever since she made the suggestion to Abraham that he take the maidservant Hagar and have a child by him, ever since she suggested that, who Hagar was had shifted different in Sarah's eyes. And in this story, she says, that slave woman. Once again, Abraham finds himself in the middle of an impossible situation, as we talked about in the last story in chapter 16. Abraham finds himself in the middle of this situation when he knows that the reaction and he knows that the tensions between Sarah and Hagar are out of line. And simply the word that we have in chapter 21, verse 11, says that the matter distressed Abraham greatly. Abraham's distress. I can only imagine what Abraham felt as he saw the tensions, maybe tensions for 14 years now, and especially in the last two or three with the birth of Isaac. And he knew it wasn't right. He knew that Ishmael was his son, and it wasn't fair. And so he worried, it says, about his son. And he greatly was distressed because it concerned his son. We do see in Abraham a little picture here of Abraham and his wrestling with what to do about a situation that was unjust and unfair. It seems like Abraham must have wrestled for a while with this. At least it seems like that, because when we look, we don't know how much time elapsed between verse 10 and 11 when Sarah said to Abraham, get that slave woman's son out of here. Don't know how long it was until verse 12, and in between is verse 11. The matter distressed Abraham greatly because it concerned his son. I imagine that Abraham could see this problem that was too big for him. You know, I always try to think about, when I study a passage, Old Testament or New Testament, simple or maybe not so simple, what is it that God would say to me in this story? What is it about this story that God would say on a practical level to me? And when I came to this verse and this thought, it spoke, I feel like God spoke to me here about Abraham. Here's Abraham. He's struggling with a problem that's too big for him. He doesn't know how to solve it. But Abraham seems to do the right thing here. He comes and he talks to God about it. It would seem that what Abraham did in that time is Abraham brought it to God. Abraham had an amazing faith, an amazing ability to talk to God. And all throughout Abraham's life, we find stories where Abraham comes and he talks to God. He says, God, I don't know what to do. I don't know where to go. And this is one of those stories that seems that way to me. Abraham shows a strength of character here. He has a problem that's too big to solve. Have you ever had a problem that's too big for you to solve? You really don't know how there can be a solution that will be a good solution. I wonder if Abraham felt that way. And so he seeks God's help and God's guidance in this story. The matter distressed Abraham greatly because it concerned his son. Abraham seemed to believe that God was able to handle things that was too big for him. And if God could work the great miracles that he did and bring him a son, Isaac, that God can work in this situation and too. And so what does Abraham do? Abraham is distressed. But Abraham takes a step, you might say, in verse 12, that shows the deep faith that Abraham. Abraham did what God told him to do, which was to do what Sarah told him to do, even though Abraham knew that the situation wasn't right and the situation wasn't fair. To Abraham, to do what he did in that next verse was really to say to Hagar and Ishmael, you're on your own and you're going to die in the wilderness. But God said, Abraham, do what Sarah tells you to do. And Abraham does it. Abraham sends her out. You wonder what Abraham felt. Man, I've wondered what Abraham felt when he was walking up to Mount Moriah with his son Isaac behind him, and God said, I want you to sacrifice my son. Boy, Abraham wrestled with some really difficult situations of what was right and what was fair the first time with Hagar, the second time with Hagar, and with Isaac when they go up on the mountain. He also wrestled with God with Sodom and Gomorrah and Lot and several things in his life. And one of the great things about Abraham is Abraham wrestled with what faith was and to believe God, that God would do what he said he would do. And Abraham heard God say, do what your wife tells you to do. And then God also made a promise to Abraham in verse 13. I will make the son of the maidservant into a nation also, because he is your offspring. And so God says, Abraham, I want you to send him out, but I'm going to take care of him. So you might say it wasn't that hard for Abraham to do that. Abraham knew that the situation wasn't right and wasn't fair, but God told him that he would take care of him. And that had to be a lot for Abraham to trust, to believe. Abraham showed a great dependence on God and faith here, that he would do what God told him to do, although for him it would be like pronouncing a death sentence on the child. So Abraham, he gives only enough food and water, it would seem, from what she could carry on her shoulder for one day. Can you imagine that? Here's Abraham with all his servants, his flocks, his gold, his silver, his tents. They're living at a spring, or they're living water, and he gives her one pot and one loaf of bread or whatever it was, and he sends her out and he tells her to go out in the wilderness. I just imagine the heaviness of that for Abraham to do that. He must have believed that God, if God could give him a son at 100 years old, God could work in this situation too. And so he sends Hagar and Ishmael out. And it says that they go out into the wilderness. Verse 14 says, she went on her way and wandered in the desert of Beersheba. I know several times since I went to Israel, I've shown you pictures of Beersheba and the desert area south. This is southern Israel. This is south of Jerusalem, 30 or 40 miles. Beersheba, now called Beersheba, here it's Beersheba, is the furthest main town in Israel today. You've heard the term from Dan to Beersheba, so-and-so, about Israel. That's because Dan was in the north, and it was the largest up around Galilee, and you had Beersheba in the south, and there wasn't anything below Beersheba. It's desert. And that's where Abraham sent Hagar and Ishmael into the desert place, and it says she wandered. I don't know how long she wandered around, but she had that water, and she had that little bit of food, and she wandered for a time, and then she got to the point where she just knew that they could not survive. When the water and the skin was gone, she put the boy under one of the bushes. Then she went off and sat down nearby, about a bow shot away, for she thought, I cannot watch the boy die. And as she sat there nearby, she began to sob. I guess finally Hagar had come to the place where she knew that she could not. There was no hope. There's nothing that she could do. But there's one thing that she forgot. She forgot what her son's name was. She forgot that time in chapter 16 when she cried out to God and God heard her cry. You remember once before she was in the desert place and she was crying, and it says God heard her crying. And here for the second time, there she is in the wilderness. Verse 17, it says, God hears. All along, God knew where Ishmael was and where Hagar were. He knew all about the unfair circumstances. He knew about the injustice of it. He knew about what Hagar had done wrong and Ishmael had done wrong and what Sarah had done wrong, what Abraham had done wrong. God knew it all along, and he had never taken his eye, he had never taken his hand off of Hagar and Ishmael. Verse 17 is kind of interesting. It's almost, I understand, I've read in the Hebrew, play on words. Verse 17, God heard the boy crying. You know that Ishmael's name means God hears me. So it's like, God hears me here. He heard the boy crying. Back in 16, God heard Hagar crying. And then she says, the boy's name will be Ishmael because God hears me. And so then God sends an angel and a message. It says, God heard the boy crying, and the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, "What is the matter, Hagar? Do not be afraid. God has heard the boy crying as he lies there. Lift the boy up and take him by the hand, for I will make him into a great nation." Now God gives to Hagar the same promise that he gave Abraham. He said, "Hagar, now I want you to know that you're a part of the promise too. I'm going to make a promise to you, and your boy's going to make it, and you're going to make it, and he will become the father of many descendants of many nations." God did not spare this family and Hagar and Ishmael from the consequences of the jealousy and the animosity. In fact, when you look now through Abraham's life, and Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph, and all through the history, there's going to be the consequences of what happened back there when Sarah and Abraham got ahead of God's will, and they chose to bring Hagar into this situation and this family. There's going to be animosity between the descendants of Ishmael and the descendants of Isaac for all of time. Ishmael and Isaac will both grow up to have many descendants. And you look back again to Hagar's first message from the angel. Again, this verse 12 of this chapter says, "And he will live in hostility toward all his brothers." And that's exactly what's going to happen from this moment on. God delivered Ishmael and delivered Hagar and delivered Sarah and delivered Isaac and delivered Abraham. But yet there are consequences. There's always consequences of being outside of God's will. God doesn't forget about us. God doesn't give up on us. But there are consequences. And Ishmael's life especially. You look at these two young men, or these two boys, one 14 or 15 or 16 years old, and one 2 or 3 or 4, and know that their lives went a different path. When you think about what happens from this point, you know that Ishmael had 12 sons. Now that is according to history, not biblical history, but some of the names of Ishmael are named. Go to that chart that shows the 12 sons of Ishmael, if you would. But you've sort of heard the 12 sons of Jacob. They've become the 12 tribes of Israel. And Reuben and Gad and Asher and Naphtali and all the sons of Jacob, 12 sons. Again, that's a generation away, but also Ishmael had 12 sons, according to history. And some of those names that are Ishmael's sons become names that are found throughout the rest of the Old Testament and the Bible. And there's a mixing in of Ishmael's descendants that become the Palestinians. They're not all of Ishmael's descendants, but you just think about some of these tribal names and how they make up today the Palestinian people. And then you think about the sons of Isaac, Jacob, and then Jacob's 12 sons. And then you have the whole story of the Israelite people and all of them making up the Jewish people. And today you have the ongoing tensions between the Palestinian people and the Jewish people. So truly, the prophecy that God gave and God told about this story of Sarah and Hagar will become a prophecy that will be played out until Jesus comes back. And the tensions that we see in part in the world today, especially the tensions about the Palestinian question. Should the Palestinians own the territory and live in the territory and possess the territory that the Jewish people today? It all goes back to the descendants of Isaac and the descendants of Ishmael. Both of those groups claim today that the Holy Land was promised to them by God. And that's part of the deep, deep sentiment in Israel today, as you have these two groups of people who are on the edge of hating each other. And both of them believe that Abraham is their father and that they are entitled to the land of Israel. And so it's amazing how that sin and that how mixed up that story was way back there has brought us today to the place that we have the tensions that are in Israel today. In addition, there's another part of that, and that's Islam and how that plays in. But basically, at the root of the problem in Israel today is Jews and Palestinians. And then you have Islam kind of kind of twisted and tied in as well. And you have such a powder keg there that goes back to this time in Israel at this time. And they will live in hostility, quoting from that verse in chapter 16, even to this day. How true that is, even to this day. Whoever wrote the book of Genesis, as Moses put that together, knew so well that it would exist. And they will live in hostility toward all their brothers, and it will go on until today. Well, thank you for being here tonight. We'll continue next week in this same chapter in the life of Abraham and look at the next story of Beersheba. Thank you for being here tonight. Next Sunday morning is our Penview Choir concert and honoring our veterans. We're looking forward to that. And then the Sunday after, we'll be having graduation Sunday and celebrating and worship together. And then the following Sunday, going to be starting a new sermon series from the book of Genesis about Lot and the story of Abraham and Lot. Going to plan to pick that up the first Sunday, June the 7th.